distance. Blend it in. The hospital staff was busy trying to stop someone from dying. They paid him no attention. Even the staff not involved with a critical patient were distracted, watching the life and death drama unfold. He continued to room 8, walking right past, barely slowing to look inside and stopped in front of the next room. He stood in the doorway pretending to watch a shrunken old man sleep, all alone. The curtains over the glass walls of Jenny Krueger's room were open. He could see inside. Jenny lay still. Wires and tubes snaked around her. Liquid dripped into an IV line in her arm. A ventilator at the bedside puffed in a steady rhythm, and a bank of monitors kept track of every heartbeat and every breath. Sometimes medical personnel grew too dependent on those monitors and didn't come into rooms often enough. He'd been hoping to sneak in during a lull in the nurse's attention. He nearly flinched as he spotted a woman sitting beside Jenny's bed, a book open in her lap. The woman stood, glancing around as if sensing his scrutiny. She did a quick scan of Jenny's equipment, then sat back down. Her interest in her book seemed to wane. Her gaze strayed to the door, watchful. In jeans and boots, she was tall, with short blonde hair and a sharp face. A slight bulge under her sweater suggested she might be armed. The suburban hospital didn't have metal detectors. Who was she? She didn't look exactly like a cop, but she didn't look like she'd take any crap from anybody either. Shoving his hands into his pockets, he considered his options. A janitor in green overalls pushed a large wheeled trash receptacle down the hallway. The janitor stopped at each doorway, ducked into the room, and emptied the non-medical waste into his cart. Coughing into his fist to cover his face, he stepped aside as the janitor emptied the old man's trash can. His fingers closed around the syringe in his pocket. Heroin. Injected into the muscle, it would take some time to work. He would be long gone before Jenny Krueger began to react to the drug in her system. Her body was already compromised. She'd be dead in a few hours. No one would suspect she'd been given a dose of heroin while lying in a hospital bed. His plan had been to wait until no one was watching, then slip in and give her the injection. It would take a minute or two at best. There were always codes and other emergencies that distracted the ICU staff, like the one up the hall. But the blonde woman's presence screwed up everything. He could wait until she left the room. She'd have to step out at some point. She must eat. But that would take time he didn't have. He had things to do, people to see. Not that any of them were as important as Jenny. The minute she opened her eyes and her mouth, his game was over. He'd kept his secret for 23 years. He sure as hell wasn't giving up now. She appeared to be in some sort of coma. There was a chance she could still die without his interference. He couldn't kill Jenny and the blonde at the same time, not without attracting attention, especially if the blonde was armed. An ICU death had to be silent, swift, and stealthy. It needed to look like an unfortunate complication of Jenny's overdose. Adjusting his baseball cap, he dropped his chin and walked down the hall. He'd have to come back later. He left the ICU wing the same way he'd come in. In room 3, a nurse pulled a sheet over the patient's face. The sense of letdown and failure was palpable in the people slowly trickling from the room. A few had tears in their eyes and on their faces. They consoled each other with hugs and shoulder pats. They'd cared. They'd tried. The patient had still died. Maybe he'd get lucky, and the same would happen to Jenny. He pressed the silver square on the wall. The automatic double doors opened with a dramatic swoosh. He'd be back. He had no choice. He had to think of some way to make sure that Jenny Krueger never woke up. Chapter 31. Morgan borrowed a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt and wandered into the kitchen. Lance stood at the counter, cracking eggs into a bowl. He picked up a whisk and began to beat the eggs. She walked up behind him and wrapped her arms around his waist. "I can't believe you let Sharp throw away your coffee machine."
"He says coffee strains your adrenal glands. Green tea is healthier."
"I'm sure he's right, but green tea does not give my brain the swift kick in the pants that it needs." Lance had embraced Sharp's crunchy organic lifestyle. Morgan had not. He nodded toward the cabinet.
I bought you a surprise. She opened the cabinet. A single-serve Keurig machine sat on the shelf. Craving caffeine, she imagined a beam of sunlight and a chorus of angels. In case I didn't say it enough last night, I love you. She lifted the machine from the shelf. He leaned over and kissed her.
I love you too. You have no idea how much.
You showed me, with coffee. She put the machine on the counter, set it up, and pressed start. Way better than diamonds.
I'll remember that.
Lance poured the eggs into the pan. The doorbell rang.
I'll get it.
Morgan went to the foyer and peeked through the narrow window next to the door. She called over her shoulder as she opened the door.
It's Sharp.
Sharp breezed in the door.
How is he?
Hanging in.
Morgan led the way back to the kitchen. How are you feeling?
I'm all right.
But Sharp moved stiffly and held his arm close to his body.
Hungry?
Lance asked Sharp.
The eggs are organic. No thanks.
Sharp shook his head.
I have good news for you.
Frowning, Lance stirred the eggs.
About what? I asked Stella and Brody to look over your mother's house last night.
Sharp said.
Why?
Lance transferred the eggs to two plates. He handed one to Morgan and picked up a fork. Sharp leaned on the counter. Dark circles underscored his eyes. He'd clearly been up all night.
Because I don't think she tried to kill herself.
Lance paused, a forkful of eggs halfway to his mouth.
I'm almost afraid to ask why you think that.
Sharp explained what he and Stella and Brody had found the night before.
Someone was in your mother's house yesterday.
Morgan didn't know whether she should be relieved. Was it better if someone had tried to kill Jenny or if she'd done it herself?
She would never let a stranger in.
Lance set down his fork, his food untouched.
I know.
Sharp said.
Brody said he'd try to have the tests expedited. He'll also ask the doctors to run a full drug panel on your mom. How soon did they say until you can talk to her?
The critical care doctor estimates about 48 hours.
Lance said.
I spoke to the nurse earlier this morning. There's been no change in her condition.
I'm glad she's in the ICU.
Sharp said.
The regular floors are too accessible.
A chill zipped across Morgan's skin. She shouldn't be alone.
I have to stay with her.
Lance dumped his plate on the counter and moved toward the kitchen doorway.
If someone tried to kill her, there must be a reason. Which means they'll try again when they learn they weren't successful.
Sharp raised a stop hand and stepped in front of Lance, blocking his path.
I've already got your mom covered. Brody's girl, Hannah, is already in the ICU, sitting by your mom's bed.
Hannah Barrett?
Lance tried to get around him. That's Mac's sister. Morgan said,
I would trust her.
Yes, Brody says Hannah can handle it.
Sharp put a hand on Lance's shoulder.
We need to find out who did this. That's the only way your mom is ever going to be safe.
You're right.
But where do we go from here?
Lance rubbed his eyes.
Nothing makes sense.
But we're clearly making someone nervous.
Sharp pointed out.
Let's see if we can poke a few more badgers. I'd like to look at your mother's recent email and phone activity. I can't imagine her just opening the door to a stranger. Unless they called her first.
Lance finished the thought.
I just gave that information to the sheriff. I'll write her account logins down for you.
I have to get dressed. Morgan turned toward the bedroom. I wish we could confirm Crystal's death wasn't a suicide. I'd like more evidence than our gut feelings.
This is when not being a cop makes the job tough.
Sharp pushed off the counter and paced in a circle.
The official autopsy results might not be issued for months.
We need to go through the pictures again and see if anything jumps out at us, Morgan said.
We've already looked at them.
Sharp shook his head.
What we really need is someone who has seen more homicide scenes than the three of us. My experience is more all-purpose detective. I've only seen a few hangings. But who can we trust with pictures we shouldn't have? Do you think your grandfather would be willing to help?
I'm sure he would, Morgan said. He has much more experience working homicides than all of us put together. I'll call him.
Call him from the Jeep,
Lance said. Give me 2 minutes.
Morgan hurried to the bedroom and dressed in the old jeans and t-shirt she'd been wearing the night before. She used the second minute to brush her teeth. She walked out of the bedroom and Lance grabbed his keys from the counter.
Let's go. I'll meet you at the office,
Sharp said.
Your grandfather and I can review the photos.
I'll call Abigail and see if we can get into the roadside motel this morning, Morgan said. I don't want to wait until tonight.
They drove back to Morgan's house. Grandpa agreed, just as Morgan expected. She changed her clothes while Lance got him ready. Muscling her grandfather in and out of the Jeep was a production, but an hour later, Sharp and Lance maneuvered his wheelchair over the threshold of Sharp Investigations.
You called Abigail, right?
Sharp asked. Yes, Morgan said. She said to go ahead to the motel. She called the manager and told him to let us into the storage room. She'll meet us there as soon as she's done with her garden club meeting.
Leaving Grandpa and Sharp at the office, Lance and Morgan headed to the roadside motel.
I expected the place to be sleazy,
he said.
But this just doesn't fit the image of a motel owned by a little old lady who plays the organ for a church and runs the local garden club.
The motel was a dirty-looking strip of rooms on a rural stretch of highway. There were no other buildings in sight. No doubt the location afforded privacy for guests who didn't want their patronage made public. The sign at the edge of the parking lot read vacancy. The office was located on the left end.
They rent rooms by the hour.
We're gonna need a shower after this,
Morgan said. At least I'm dressed down.
I wish we had PPEs to zip into,
Lance agreed.
I don't even want to think about what a spray of luminol and a blacklight would show in any of these rooms.
They went into the office. A young man with a puffy neck beard sat on a high stool behind a counter watching a small TV. He slid off his stool as they walked in.
You need a room?
No. Morgan shook her head. Abigail said we could look in the storage room. She was going to call ahead.
Cool. He led them through the office into a back room and unlocked a door into a small windowless chamber. He flipped a wall switch. Overhead lights illuminated a dusty space that smelled of mold. Filing cabinets lined one entire wall. A desk was pushed up against the other. Morgan pressed a finger under her nose and stifled a sneeze.
The old records are in the filing cabinets. They aren't organized very well, so good luck.
The clerk left them to it. I'll start on the left. Morgan tossed her coat over the desk and rolled up the sleeves of her sweater. Lance pulled on gloves and handed her a pair. Then he started with the cabinet on the right. He slid a file out and opened it, then checked another. He moved through two cabinets, randomly reading dates. For the next half hour, Morgan worked her way through several drawers. I found 1994. She dug through the row of files and came up with a yellowed book. Here's August. Lance went to her side and peered over her shoulder as she flipped through the book, only touching the edges of the paper. Depending on conditions, fingerprints could be developed on porous surfaces like paper many years after the prints were deposited. She stopped on August 10th. The entries were written in blue pen. She hovered her finger over the page. Here it is. Lance read the entry.
Mr. Joshua.
He checked in at 7 p.m., paid for an hour. Morgan slid the registry into a large envelope. She labeled the envelope with her name, the date, and location found, then turned back to the filing cabinet. Let's see if we can find his registration form. 30 minutes later, Lance pulled it from another filing cabinet.
Got it.
They looked at it together. There's no personal information, no car license plate. He listed his home address as 123 Main Street, Anytown, New York. The phone number is 123-4567.
But we know he was here.
Morgan went to the window and scanned the parking lot. A red sedan was parked in front of the office. Abigail's here.
Then let's go talk to her.
Lance closed the file cabinet drawer.
You have the photo of my father to show Abigail?
I do. Are you all right?
Morgan asked. He was about to find out if his father had been a prostitute's client.
Yes.
Lance opened the door for her.
Look, I've spent a lifetime putting my dad on a pedestal. He was just a man. What if he wasn't perfect?
He did his best to take care of me and my mother. I have to open my eyes if I want to learn the truth.
She gave his hand a squeeze before they went into the main office. Abigail was on the computer behind the desk. Did you find what you were looking for?
I think so.
Morgan pulled the photo of Vic she'd taken from the whiteboard out of her tote. Next to her, Lance tensed and stepped away to look out the window at the parking lot. Morgan pointed to Vic. Do you recognize this man as one of Mary's clients? Abigail squinted at the photo. She lifted her reading glasses from the chain around her neck and set them on her nose. He doesn't look familiar at all. Morgan could sense Lance's relief from 6 feet away. But I know this man. He was one of Mary's regulars. Abigail leaned closer and tapped the photograph. This is Mr. Joshua. Her fingertip landed on Brian Leeds' face. Stunned, Morgan stared at the photo. Lance crossed the room in two long strides.
Are you sure?
Positive, Abigail said. He drove a black Pontiac Trans Am. He'd try to hide it behind the building, but the engine was loud. When he'd leave the parking lot, gravel would shoot all over.
Morgan caught Lance's eye. He looked as shocked as she felt. Brian Leed was Mr. Joshua.
Thank you. Morgan lifted the envelope that held the register. Is it all right if we take the register with us? We'll bring it back.
Given that the killer was snapping at their heels on this investigation, Morgan didn't want to leave the register behind. She'd rather personally deliver it to the sheriff. Abigail nodded.
Sure.
Morgan pivoted toward the door, then turned back. The revelation about Brian had almost made her forget about Crystal's ex. When was the last time you saw Warren Fox? Abigail took off her glasses.
He was slinking around here about 2 weeks ago, bugging Crystal. He wanted to move back in with her.
So much for his statement that he hadn't seen Crystal in months.
Was anyone in this case telling the truth?
Please be careful, Abigail. Morgan said. Having information regarding this case has proven to be unhealthy for others.
Abigail reached under the counter and brought up a shotgun. Thank you for your concern, dear. I'll be sure to take extra care.
Morgan followed Lance outside and they climbed into the Jeep. Lance tapped a finger on the steering wheel.
Seems like everyone's lying. Didn't Brian Leed have some kind of sports car under a tarp in his garage?
He did, Morgan said. Brian Leed is Mr. Joshua. He was a regular client of Mary's. He was with her the night your dad disappeared.
Lance put the Jeep into gear.
Which was also the night Mary was probably killed. Time to pay Brian another visit.
Chapter 32. Trying to keep his temper in check, Lance parked in front of Brian Leeds' house. The garage door was up. In the driveway, Brian was rubbing a chamois over the shining fender of a sleek black Porsche 911. Lance and Morgan walked up the sidewalk to stand next to the car.
Hey, Brian.
Lance scanned the car.
What year is that? She's a 2007.
Brian inspected his work.
Low miles?
Lance asked.
80,000.
Brian shook his head.
Cars like this are made to be driven. It's a sin to let them sit in a garage. Brian knows all about sin.
Anger simmered low in Lance's chest. He lifted his gaze to the sky for a few seconds to get himself back under control.
What brings you back here?
Brian buffed a spot on the side mirror.
A few follow-up questions,
Lance said.
You've always had a black sports car, haven't you?
I've had a few, sure.
Brian wiped a bead of water from the hood.
What did you drive back in the day?
Lance asked.
All I can remember is that it was loud. That would have been the Trans Am.
Brian whistled.
That was a sweet car. I couldn't afford a Porsche back then, not with kids to raise. And you're right.
He grinned.
That engine didn't purr, it roared.
Lance bent over and looked inside the car.
Money was tight. Kids are expensive.
Brian turned away from his car, his grin fading and his eyes narrowing, as if he had just realized Lance's tone wasn't casual. His eyes darted back and forth between Morgan and Lance. Suspicion lit his gaze.
You know what? I have an appointment. Is there a specific reason you're here?
Your alibi is circling the drain.
There is.
Lance moved forward, resentment curling his hand into a fist. All these years, Brian had been lying. Morgan put a hand on Lance's arm as if she could restrain him.
You might not want your neighbors to overhear the questions we're going to ask you.
Brian rocked back on his heels, assessing them.
You're not the police.
His tone turned smug.
I don't have to talk to you at all.
If you'd rather talk to the sheriff, that can be arranged.
Lance took his phone from his pocket.
I'll call him right now.
Brian's throat undulated. Muscles on the sides of his jaw shifted, as if he was clenching his jaw. He glanced up the street, then shifted back to his toes and turned toward the open garage.
All right, but I don't have much time.
They followed him into the house. He didn't offer them coffee or a chair. He spun around.
What's this about?
Lance stopped in the middle of the kitchen.
How much did Mary charge you for sex?
Brian's face went whiter than the quartz countertop. He backed up a step.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Does the name Mr. Joshua ring a bell? Morgan asked.
No.
Brian took another step, stopping when his back hit the wall.
You were my father's friend.
The words scratched Lance's throat on the way out.
You lied to the police about the night he went missing. What else did you lie about?
Did Brian kill Mary? What about Crystal? Lance couldn't even process the thought that Brian had tried to kill Jenny. Brian glared back and his chest puffed out.
You need to leave.
It must have been hard to squeeze money for a prostitute into the family budget.
Rage crawled around inside Lance's chest, making itself comfortable, as if it was in for the long haul. You paid Mary Fox for sex on a regular basis. Morgan stepped closer, her shoulder edging in front of Lance's, clearly concerned he was going to throttle Brian. The owner of the roadside motel identified you as one of Mary's clients. You used the alias Mr. Joshua and you were with her at the motel the night Vic went missing. I think we can reasonably hypothesize that was the same night Mary was killed.
Get out!
Brian's face reddened. Lance pressed closer, edging Morgan aside. He wanted to grab Brian by the neck and shake the information out of him.
What else do you know about the night my father disappeared?
Nothing.
Brian's eyes shuddered. What happened that night, Brian? Morgan's hands wrapped around Lance's bicep, but her slim fingers had no hope of holding him back. Lance leaned in until he was right in Brian's face.
Where is my father?
I don't know!
Brian yelled. Lance shook off Morgan's hand and grabbed Brian by the front of his polo shirt.
Did you kill Mary?
God, no!
Brian tried to lean away, but the wall behind him limited his movement.
And that's the truth. I didn't see your father that night. I dropped Mary back at PJ's afterward.
Brian didn't try to look away.
That's the last time I saw her. I didn't know she was dead until you told me.
Was that the truth? Brian had already proven himself to be a gifted liar. Lance eased back, putting some space between them. Brian's sliminess felt contagious. He was supposed to have been Vic's buddy, someone his dad confided in about his troubled marriage, his wife's fragility, his son's vulnerability. Brian had betrayed one of his best friends.
23 years ago, someone murdered Mary Fox.
Lance barely recognized his own voice.
But since her bones were found, two possible witnesses have died, and someone tried to kill my mother. Where were you last night?
I had a meeting, and then dinner with a client,
Brian said.
I was tied up from 5 o'clock until 10.
Would this client back you up?
Yes.
Brian nodded.
It was a business dinner. There's no reason why he wouldn't. We were at a restaurant, and I have a credit card receipt.
He took out his wallet and pulled out a receipt. Lance glanced at it. The timestamp was 9:36. The date was correct and the dinner was expensive enough to have lasted several hours. If Brian's alibi was legitimate, it would clear him of PJ's death and the attempt on Jenny's life.
I'd be very, very careful,
Lance said.
Someone is making sure anyone who had information about Mary's death can't talk.
Brian looked over Lance's shoulder. Shit. Lance spun around. Natalie was standing in the doorway. Had she been there long enough to hear Brian confess to adultery?
You bastard!
She shouted.
Seems like she had.
While Brian's face was dead white, Natalie's cheeks had flushed an angry red.
Nat!
Brian's throat worked as he swallowed hard.
I always knew you cheated on me, but a hooker?
Natalie took two steps, moving through the doorway into the kitchen.
Who knows what kind of diseases you're carrying?
It was just her,
Brian stammered.
There haven't been. Oh, shut up. Do you think I'm stupid? You've always been a cheater, but you couldn't be discreet about it.
She yelled.
You're even lazy about cheating. How many whores have there been, Brian?
No more, I swear. Mary wasn't really a hooker, she was...
Brian seemed unable to fill in the blank.
A fucking hooker!
Natalie screamed.
You paid her for sex! This is simple stuff!
You never liked sex.
Brian's eyes went mean.
Men have needs.
It wasn't sex I didn't like. It was sex with you.
Natalie gritted her teeth. Her furious gaze darted to Lance and Morgan. Humiliation hovered under her rage and helplessness for a few seconds. Then her attention snapped back to her husband with the force of a mousetrap.
Brian can't get it up unless there's some violence involved. He's into inflicting pain. I'm not into receiving it. Did Mary let you yank her around by the hair? Did she like to be tied up and have you hurt and humiliate her? You realize that none of that dominant shit really compensates for a small penis, right?
Brian looked like he was going to have a stroke any second. His mouth opened and closed, gaping as if he couldn't suck in any oxygen.
You're pathetic,
she spat. Lance eased sideways, distancing himself from Brian and the stream of wrath his wife was pouring on him. Natalie. Morgan's voice was soft and soothing. Where were you the night Lance's father disappeared? Lance froze. Did Natalie kill Mary?
I was here. Someone had to be home with the children.
Natalie's focus never left Brian's face. No one would be able to give her an alibi. Did you kill Mary? Morgan asked in a gentle voice, her tone suggesting an admission would be totally understandable under the circumstances. Natalie blinked. Her attention flickered to Morgan.
Why would I kill her? It wasn't her fault that my husband is disgusting.
A tear rolled down her cheek. She didn't seem to notice. Her attention returned to Brian, fresh fury flickering in her eyes.
I didn't even know it was Mary until just now.
Brian hadn't just betrayed Vic. He'd betrayed his wife, too. Everything about him was a lie. Who was he sleeping with now? Natalie, is there anyone who can verify that you were here that night? Morgan asked.
No. The kids were all in bed.
More angry tears spilled from Natalie's eyes.
But you can believe me when I say that the only person I have ever wanted to kill is Brian.
She reached into her purse and pulled out a huge handgun. Lance took three steps sideways, stepping in front of Morgan, one arm sweeping out to tuck her behind him, the other drawing his sidearm. But the only reason he'd shoot Natalie was if she turned the gun on him and Morgan. Brian was on his own. Life lesson. If you lie down with dogs, you might not get up again.
Where did you get that?
Brian screeched.
I bought it, dumbass.
She shot back.
It's not hard. You go out late at night, I'm here by myself. You don't like dogs. I wanted it for protection.
Put it down. You're not gonna shoot me.
Brian took a step forward, his face smug. Lance thought she might.
Dude, I wouldn't do that,
Lance said. Natalie's gun went off. The rooster cookie jar exploded a few feet to Brian's right, sending ceramic shards and cookie bits in all directions. Brian turned toward an open doorway to his left, but Natalie fired another shot, cutting off his path. Trapped, Brian searched the room for a way out.
You're gonna kill me.
Oh, please.
I've been taking lessons for months, not that you would notice. Do you think I'd buy a gun if I didn't know how to shoot it? If I had wanted to hit you, you'd be bleeding. She lowered the gun, pointing it at the floor. Get out of my house.
It's not...
The gun muzzle lifted an inch.
Brian.
Lance warned in a what-are-you-thinking tone. You have 3 seconds. Natalie tapped the toe of her sensible shoe on the kitchen tile.
One.
Brian complained.
But this is my...
Two. Natalie said. Brian slid along the wall. Natalie moved out of his way, keeping several feet of space between them. But she didn't turn her back on him. She spun in a slow circle as he passed her. The front door slammed. A few seconds later, a powerful engine started up and they heard the Porsche roar away. He'll be back. Natalie stuffed her gun into her purse. Best purchase I've made in years. I was just never the sort of person who could stand up for myself.
What changed?
Morgan asked. A few months ago, a friend of mine finally talked me into going into a support group. Hearing other women talk about getting out of bad marriages made me think I could do it too. I've been secretly planning to leave him for months. Kicking him out feels even better.
We should go.
Lance nudged Morgan's arm. Someone probably called the police. Gunshots were not normal in this neighborhood. Natalie walked across the kitchen, pieces of ceramic crunching under her shoes. She pulled a dustpan from the pantry and began to sweep up.
Are you all right?
Morgan asked. Natalie paused for a few seconds. I feel better than I have in years. It makes me angry that I wasted so much of my life. I could have been happy. Why did I put up with that asshole all this time? The question sounded rhetorical. Lance kept his mouth shut. Natalie swept up a pile of red and yellow crockery pieces. I always hated that cookie jar. Brian bought it for me. She nudged the decapitated rooster head with a toe and then ground it under her shoe. Stupid cock. Lance didn't wait for the police to show. He took Morgan's elbow and steered her toward the front door.
The last thing I need right now is another run-in with the sheriff's department.
True. She agreed as they went outside. You won't be able to solve the case from a cell.
You asked Natalie about her activity the night my dad disappeared. Do you really think she could have done it?
Lance got behind the wheel. He glanced up and down the street, but didn't see any curious neighbors or police. Morgan slid into the passenger seat. Now that I think about it, no. I would lean toward a male killer. Strangling a young woman and putting her into the trunk of a car would take physical strength. I doubt I could lift a dead body. Hanging Crystal took some muscle, too.
We'll have to tell Sheriff King about Brian.
Lance drove away.
Brian lied in his police statements.
He lied to Sharp 23 years ago, Morgan said. The statute of limitations would have run out on making a false statement many years ago.
But admitting he falsified his statements means he has no alibi for Mary's murder.
And he also admitted that he was with her that night. Morgan said. He said he dropped her at PJ's. But who can believe a chronic liar?
But if Brian had an alibi for PJ Houlihan's death, and the attempt on my mother's life, then he probably didn't kill Mary.
Chapter 33. Morgan stepped into her office. Her grandfather was studying the whiteboard from his wheelchair. He held one of Sharp's green protein shakes in his hand. Next to him, Sharp pointed at the board with a dry erase marker. What have you two been up to? She touched her grandfather's shoulder on the way to her desk.
Sharp made me this drink.
Her grandfather examined his glass.
It looks disgusting, but the taste isn't bad.
We found a couple of new leads, thanks to your grandfather.
Sharp said.
Art hasn't forgotten anything about investigating.
Lance came in. 4 adults crowded the small room. Sharp set down his marker.
Tell us what happened with Brian Lead.
By the time Lance finished the story, Sharp and Grandpa were shaking their heads. Sharp snorted.
Nice to see karma getting payback. I can't believe you lied all these years. I'll keep Brian at the top of the suspect list for Mary's murder.
Grandpa drained his glass.
We suspect the current murderer is the same person who killed Mary, but we don't know that for certain. And forgive me if I don't take his word for it that he dropped Mary back off at PJ's that night, or about anything else, once a liar, always a liar. His word is worthless.
Sharp drew a big fat star next to Brian's name.
Warren Fox is a liar too. He told us he hadn't seen Crystal in months, but Abigail said he'd been hanging around the motel harassing her recently.
Lance pointed to the board.
We need to follow up with him.
Stan needs a follow-up interview too, Morgan said. If Brian lied about their whereabouts, then so did Stan. Was he covering for a friend, or was there another reason he lied?
We have more lies than truth at this point.
Lance shook his head. Now, what did you two discover today? Morgan asked Sharp.
First, your grandfather found indications that Crystal could have been murdered.
Sharp opened a laptop on Morgan's desk. The four gathered around the computer. Sharp pulled up a photo of Crystal. The gruesome image made Morgan flinch even though she'd seen it before. Grandpa pointed to the screen where he'd zoomed in on Crystal's hands.
Look at her fingertips.
Her fingernail is broken, Morgan said. And I see a yellow thread and a little blood under the nail.
Good eye.
Grandpa zoomed in even more.
She pulled at the rope. She has some scratches on her neck, too, which could indicate that she was struggling against an attacker. Or, once her brain figured out she was dying, her survival instincts kicked in, and she tried to get the rope off her neck. Without a drop long enough to break the neck, it can take a few minutes to die by hanging.
Morgan had a mental image of the woman's body flailing, her feet kicking, knocking over the chair, her fingers tearing at the noose around her neck. But at that point, she couldn't free herself.
Right.
Grandpa went to another image, a close-up of the rope around her neck.
Do you see the way the rope has shifted on her throat?
Morgan leaned in and pointed to the screen. This abrasion? Next to her, Lance said,
I would expect the rope to move a little when she stepped off the chair.
Yes,
Grandpa said.
But to me, this looks like it could be two distinct ligature marks. A horizontal line and an angled line, with the abrasion connecting them.
And here's where Grandpa's experience with the dead made all the difference. Morgan sat back. As if someone stood behind her and choked her with the rope and then strung her up.
And the noose shifted position when her body weight hit the rope.
Lance straightened.
Maybe she didn't commit suicide. Maybe she was murdered.
We can't prove it,
Sharp said. How do we tell the ME? Morgan asked. We aren't supposed to have these photos.
We don't,
Lance said.
Frank won't miss it. He'll have the actual body. The marks will be even clearer to him. Is this enough for the medical examiner to find the death suspicious?
Depends what else the autopsy turned up.
Grandpa studied the screen for a few seconds. Without his insight, they wouldn't have had this information until the official autopsy was released, which could take months, since the medical examiner would wait for lab results and the tox screen before he would issue an official cause of death. Sheriff King would never share preliminary autopsy results.
What now?
Lance asked. Morgan studied the board. What did Crystal and PJ and Jenny all know?
Crystal and PJ have a tighter connection. A relationship with Mary. But I can't see how Jenny fits into this.
Sharp tapped his closed marker on his chin.
She was home when Vic went missing.
He started a new column for Crystal's death.
Art has some other ideas as well.
Feels good to be useful.
Grandpa closed the laptop and stared at the board.
The more I looked at the file, the more I thought this was never about your dad, Lance. Vic had a wife sinking into mental illness, financial problems, and a 10-year-old he was trying to shield from all of that. He didn't have time to misbehave. He could barely squeeze out an hour or so a week to have a beer with his pals. He couldn't even play baseball anymore. He'd quit his baseball team because he didn't have time for it.
Sharp cradled his injured arm.
Until Mary's bones turned up.
We had no other crime to link to Vic's disappearance.
Grandpa nodded.
And since her bones were discovered, you've been looking for a connection between Vic and Mary. It's possible Brian was that link. But what if there is no connection?
You think my father was collateral damage? Lance asked. Morgan watched Lance. What was he feeling? How could he discuss his father's fate objectively? His face was strained, his mouth grim.
It's possible that Vic was accidentally swept up in something relating to Mary.
Sharp set his marker on the bottom edge of the board.
But Art and I have been researching other events around the time of Vic's disappearance, thinking he and Mary might both have been caught in something entirely unrelated.
Have you found anything? Morgan asked. Sharp paced.
During the week of August 10th, 1994, the biggest events were a fatal car accident on the interstate, two burglaries, and three drunks arrested for assault. At first, we found nothing unusual about any of these events,
Grandpa said,
until we dug deeper and learned that Lou Ford, one of the drunks, died from a traumatic head injury.
I don't see how that could possibly be related, Lance said.
He was arrested during a bar fight on August 10th.
Sharp paused.
At PJ's.
Oh. Lance dropped into a chair and rubbed his temples.
Brian said he dropped Mary at PJ's around 8 p.m.
Grandpa shuffled some papers.
Lou Ford was arrested at 8:30.
Morgan tapped a pen on her desk. If Brian was telling the truth, Mary might have seen the fight.
Then what? How does Mary end up dead? She saw something?
Lance suggested.
Maybe there was more to the bar fight than the cops were told. Who was the arresting officer?
Sharp consulted his notes.
Deputy Owen Walsh. Owen retired and moved to Florida a few years ago. Ford's family sued the sheriff's department.
What were the grounds for the lawsuit? Morgan perked up. Sharp continued.
The other two men were taken directly to the ER for stitches. Ford appeared to be uninjured, just intoxicated. He was brought to the sheriff's station and put in the holding cell where he died. The ME found a head injury during the autopsy. The family won a small civil settlement. Ford had a long history of drunk and disorderly conduct. This wasn't his first bar fight. Multiple witnesses stated he was the aggressor. The jury was unsympathetic. They found for the plaintiff, but the settlement was too small to matter. No charges were ever filed on Deputy Walsh, though the department changed several policies as a result of the case. We need to talk to Owen Walsh,
Lance said. Sharp nodded.
I already left a message on his cell phone. Ford was 55 years old and unmarried when he died. His sister brought the lawsuit against the sheriff's department. I'm trying to track her down. She moved out of the area. I'll keep following up with Owen Walsh and Ford's sister.
This case keeps getting more complicated, Morgan said.
But wait, there's more.
Sharp added.
I also found out that the ADA plea bargained Ricky Jackson's life. He has to complete a drug rehab program. That the kid who was robbing Crystal's house while her body hung dead in her bedroom?
Grandpa asked.
That's the one.
Lance cracked his shoulder.
We should talk to Mr. Jackson again. When we interviewed him, we didn't know Warren might have molested Mary when she was a child.
Grandpa slumped in his chair. Despite the brighter look in his eyes, his shoulders sagged. She put her hand on his shoulder. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
He patted her hand. Lance and I'll take you home, she said, worried. Grandpa didn't argue, which meant he was truly exhausted.
Morgan and I'll pay Warren another visit.
Lance stood and rolled his neck.
I didn't get to review these.
Grandpa held up a stack of papers.
Can I take them home with me? I'll make you copies.
Sharp took the pages and carried them out of the room. He brought them back a few minutes later and put them in a folder for Grandpa.
Thanks again for your help, Art.
Sharp didn't look healthy either. His face was drawn and pale, and he moved with the stiff gait of an old man. Morgan was running on coffee and Lance had to be feeling the effects of too little sleep and too much stress. But they had no time for a break. The killer was ahead of them at every step of the investigation. Chapter 34. Lance carried the bag of groceries he and Morgan had picked up for Elijah Jackson to the old man's doorstep. The afternoon had turned gray and cold. Shivering next to him, Morgan knocked. The old man opened the door and motioned them in.
Come in.
Mr. Jackson's eyes misted as Lance brought the groceries inside.
I don't know how to thank you.
You don't have to.
Lance followed him down the hall into the kitchen and set the bag on the counter. A small fire smoldered in the next room. Morgan unbuttoned her coat, started to take it off, then slipped it back onto her shoulders. Lance took off his leather jacket and hung it on the back of a chair. The inside of the house wasn't much warmer than outside. Did the old man have heat except for the fireplace? Lance walked to the window. A small pile of wood was stacked beside the rear porch. A very small pile. Mr. Jackson smiled as he lifted a sack of coffee from the bag, then unloaded the rest of the food.
Hi, I haven't had pie in ages. Sit down, I'll make a pot of coffee.
Lance had voted to stick to staples. Morgan had insisted coffee and pie were staples. Thank you, but we can't stay, Morgan said. We just wanted to ask you a few quick questions.
Ask me anything you want. I'm going to make coffee. I've been out for a month.
The old man's mood seemed lighter and his posture straighter as he filled the coffee machine. He opened an upper cabinet. We heard Ricky was offered an alternative sentence of drug rehabilitation, Morgan said. That's good, right? Mr. Jackson paused, leaning both hands on the counter.
It would be, if they helped him get into a program, and if I could afford to pay. Ricky doesn't have insurance, and every center I called today is booked for months. He has to stay in jail until he gets into a program. I know he can't be trusted out on his own, but someone at church told me he can get heroin in jail. I never imagined such a thing. I'd love to get him help. I lost my son to drugs. I'd do anything to get my grandson back.
There are centers that charge on a sliding scale, based on how much you can afford, Morgan said. You should be able to do an online search. That should speed things up, though he'll probably have to wait his turn. Space is limited.
I don't have a computer.
Mr. Jackson took a mug from the cabinet.
I suppose I could go down to the library and use one there.
I can help you with that, Morgan volunteered, as always. He smiled at her.
You would do that?
She nodded. I could look up the information faster than you could drive to the library.
You're a doll,
Mr. Jackson said. Lance moved the conversation along. He had no doubt Morgan would be semi-adopting Mr. Jackson like she did everyone else.
We wanted to ask you about Crystal's husband.
Warren?
Mr. Jackson's face pinched.
He's useless.
Have you seen him around Crystal's house lately?
Lance asked. Mr. Jackson poured a mug of coffee and inhaled over the cup.
Warren is always hanging around. I assumed they were getting back together.
Did you see him the day Crystal died?
Lance asked.
No, but he was there last Sunday. I saw his truck at her house on my way home from church.
Mr. Jackson sipped, his eyes closing in satisfaction. Did you ever see Warren threaten Crystal? Morgan asked. Mr. Jackson set down his mug.
No, I didn't spend any time with either one of them. I'm sorry. I really can't tell you anything else. Are you sure you don't want pie?
No, we need to leave, but thank you for your help.
Lance put on his jacket.
We'll see ourselves out.
Morgan followed Lance, then turned back. One more question. Did you ever suspect Warren molested Mary when she was a child? Mr. Jackson frowned.
No, but I wouldn't put it past him.
Thank you again, Morgan said. They left Mr. Jackson cutting a slice of pie, almost giddy. I told you coffee and pie were important, Morgan said, sliding into the passenger seat of the Jeep. That poor man has very few pleasures in life. Lance drove toward the recycling center. He glanced at the clock. 2 p.m.
We can still catch Warren at work. Once he gets home, he'll never open his door to us.
Lance drove to the recycling center and parked the Jeep. He climbed out of the vehicle. Morgan walked around the rear of the SUV and fell into step beside him. Let's stick together this time.
I don't think Warren will mess with you again.
But Lance would stay close just in case. There was too much going on. Too many people lying. Too many possible motives and victims. They entered the small recycling office building. Instead of Warren Fox, a black-haired man sat at a beat-up desk, watching something on his smartphone. Lance stopped in front of the desk.
We were looking for Warren.
Yeah, he called in sick,
the black-haired man said without taking his eyes off his screen. Thanks. Morgan led the way out of the building and climbed into the Jeep. Lance slid behind the wheel.
Do we have Warren's home address?
Yes. While Morgan dug out the address and plugged it into her phone maps app, Lance called the hospital and checked on his mother's condition. Nothing had changed. As he started the engine, his phone rang.
It's Sharp.
He answered the call. Sharp didn't wait for a greeting.
Sheriff King wants to see us at the sheriff's station. He actually threatened to arrest us if we're not there in 30 minutes.
I'm on my way,
Lance said.
I'll bring the lawyer.
Please do. I believe we're going to need her.
Chapter 35. In the conference room at the sheriff's station, Morgan kept a hand on Lance's arm. On her other side, Sharp held his injured arm close and shifted in his chair as if he couldn't get comfortable.
I'm trying to solve a murder. Why are you competing with me?
The sheriff paced the narrow space between the table and the wall.
Especially you.
He pointed at Lance.
Don't you want to know what happened to your father?
Of course we do, Morgan answered, afraid of what Lance might say.
I went to see Abigail Wright at the roadside motel. I asked her for the motel registry for August 10th, 1994. Guess what she told me? That you already took it.
The sheriff turned and flattened both hands on the conference table.
This is an active murder case. I should arrest all three of you for impeding an investigation.
Morgan met his gaze without blinking. But we might all be more successful if we work together, rather than running parallel investigations.
You took evidence from the motel.
The sheriff's words were measured, as if he was working to keep his voice level. And we fully intended to turn it over to you, Morgan said, producing the large paper envelope from her tote. Inside, you'll find both the hotel registry and the registration form for Mr. Joshua.
Why did you take it?
King asked. At the rate potential witnesses are dying, we thought the registry might not be safe at the motel, Morgan said. The sheriff snorted. He didn't believe her.
We think Crystal Fox was murdered,
Sharp said.
The preliminary autopsy results are inconclusive.
The sheriff lowered his bulk into his chair and dragged a yellow legal pad in front of him. Sharp folded his hands.
The Scarlet Falls PD is investigating Jenny Krueger's supposed suicide attempt as a potential attempted murder. I heard about her overdose.
Sheriff King's gaze shifted to Lance.
How is your mother?
Lance lifted a shoulder.
Her condition is still critical.
I'm sorry to hear that.
The sheriff frowned, picked up a pencil, and made a note on his legal pad.
She seems like a nice lady.
Sharp outlined the inconsistencies at Jenny's house.
Don't you think it's a little coincidental to have two suicides in the same number of days, both associated with Mary Fox's case? And what about P.J. Houlihan and his wife? P.J. knew Mary. Was P.J. tending the bar on the night of August 10th? Do you really think they died in a bungled burglary?
I never said I did.
The sheriff leaned closer to the table, slid the register out of the envelope and opened it.
Save me some time. What am I looking for?
Brian Lead was Mary's client, and he went by the name Mr. Joshua. Morgan said, Mr. Joshua was with Mary on August 10th at the motel. The sheriff snapped his pencil in half. Brian Lead lied about his whereabouts the night Vic disappeared. Morgan said, he wasn't with Stan, he was with Mary. Brian told us that he dropped Mary off at PJ's around 8 p.m.
Hell.
The sheriff scribbled on his notepad with a broken pencil stub.
Is anyone telling the truth? We also learned there was a bar fight on that night.
Sharp jerked a thumb toward the door.
And then a man died in the holding cell.
The sheriff held up a hand.
Wait. Now you think a bar fight is related to Mary's murder?
We're exploring all options, Morgan said. We don't have any evidence to link the bar fight to Mary, other than it happened at PJ's the night Vic went missing, and she was likely there at that time.
I'll look into it.
The sheriff wrote a note and circled it, then laid his pencil down.
We'd like a copy of those three arrest reports from the bar fight.
Sharp said.
No.
The sheriff slammed a hand down on the table. The pencil halves jumped.
Stay away from this case. Do you remember what happened the last time you stuck your noses in a dangerous situation?
King paused for two heartbeats.
I had to come in and save your butt.
The sheriff had come to Morgan and Lance's rescue the previous month. King stood and swept a hand toward the door.
Get out of my station, before I find some reason to arrest all three of you.
Lance opened his mouth. Morgan shushed him with a hand on his shoulder. One more thing. Morgan extended an olive branch. She didn't think the sheriff would really arrest them, he was just frustrated. They had beat him to several important clues. Warren Fox's truck was at Crystal's house the Sunday before she died.
I know that. I talked to her neighbor. Do you think I'm sitting on my hands all day? I'm investigating the case.
The sheriff's eyes were dark and Morgan sensed his patience was depleted. Time to go. If they weren't under arrest, technically the sheriff couldn't hold them or make them answer questions. But they did have to respect his authority. This was all a balancing act. Please call us if you have any other questions. Morgan said, we want to cooperate fully with your investigation. Like I said before, we could accomplish much more as a team. He glared. We gave you Brian. She reminded him. Sheriff King looked only slightly less furious as they filed out of the conference room. Morgan wasted no time herding Lance and Sharp out the door before either one of them said anything to set the sheriff off again. They walked across the parking lot toward their vehicles. The temperature was dropping as the sun set. Sharp paused next to his Prius.
If the sheriff is not going to give us those arrest records, we need access to the police blotter. Nowadays, many police departments post their arrests online. But years ago, the Randolph County Times used to publish police activity on a weekly basis. They used to call it the Weekly Roundup.
I don't suppose those archives are online. Morgan shivered and stuck her hands in her pockets.
No.
Sharp shook his head.
I suspect I'll have to dig through the old microfiche files in the library basement.
Morgan stamped her feet. I didn't even know microfiche still existed.
It does here. The basement of the library is circa 1979. Randolph County doesn't have the funds to tackle old records.
Sharp stretched his arm as if it was stiff.
They're busy trying to stay afloat. I'll let you know what I find.
He glanced at his phone.
My battery is dead again. I need to pick up a new phone.
Any luck with the deputy who arrested Ford? Owen Walsh? Morgan asked.
No, I left another message.
Sharp said.
He hasn't returned my calls. I'm gonna call an associate in Florida and ask him to interview Walsh. It's harder to ignore someone who's standing on your doorstep. I'll let you know if I hear from him. I'm meeting the boys at the pub for an early dinner. Maybe one of them remembers the case.
The boys were all over 50. Sharp met regularly with his retired or almost retired local law enforcement buddies.
Do you still want to look for Warren Fox?
Lance asked Morgan. Yes.
Morgan hugged her coat tighter around her body, then pulled up her map app. Her phone calculated new directions from their current location.